Hi, Amber. Welcome to Confessions of a CEO. How are you today?
I am doing fantastic. How about yourself
I
today?
am
It's
doing
almost
great.
The weekend.
Yes, it is. It is. Yes. But I tell people I work retail, so the weekends kind of mean nothing in a way,
right?
Because it's
right.
like so mm-hmm. busy. But luckily, I have this weekend off, so I'm kind of excited.
Very nice. As an entrepreneur, I know that weekends mean nothing.
Yes. Like, we get no days off.
Yeah, it just means less email in the inbox to deal with, really.
Exactly. That's exactly what it means. So it is so great to have you on tonight, definitely, to talk about your company. So I kind of want you to start by telling my listeners a little bit about yourself.
Absolutely. So I'm Amber Christian. I'm a tech founder and based in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And so I've spent 20-year career in tech. Yes, that's possible. I have survived that long. It's been a great journey. And for the last couple of years, I actually moved from implementing other people's technology to building technology. And we'll get into what a fun ride that is. How amazing.
Yeah, it sounds that way. Because when you think of tech, I know for me, like, I am the least tech person. However, mm-hmm. it's something you just cannot escape. It's like either you get with it or you mm-hmm. get left behind.
Correct. Absolutely. And my big thing about tech is, you know, because I've been in it for 20 years, and, you know, for 20 years, it's been common for me to be the only female in the room. At times, or to be, you know, not a lot of women in the room. And it kind of changes the dynamics of the conversation. And so I also recognize that we have to have tech that is usable for all of us. And that's really a place that I came from in building tech, and something that has made my company really unique and is making the products we build really unique as well.
That's awesome. And I think that's what to me, as I looked over your website and everything, that made you, you know, very unique. So before I jump ahead, tell us about your company and how did you come up with that name?
Absolutely. So my company is Wonderly Software Solutions, and it's really named that because I want to inspire wonder and bring a lot more magic back to software, because a lot of that seems to have been lost for most of us. It's become this thing we deal with. And so I think it needs to be a whole lot more magical and really and more empathetic toward people. And so as I started Wonderly, it's all about what I call human-centered design, which is really just a fancy pants term for saying I talk to customers regularly.
And really, I love it.
Yes, I was like, oh, I have these lovely grand terms for them, but it really just means I care so deeply about the customers that we figure out how to keep an ongoing dialogue, because that helps us build better solutions. So the first product we've brought to the market, brought it out as a beta product in the beginning of August, and it's a software as a service, so you log into a website, mm-hmm. and it's called Bellacina. And Bellacina is Italian for beautiful scene. And so people are like, oh,
that's my bed.
Yes, beautiful scene. So if you think of your day-to-day calendar and your handwritten to-do list and your post-it notes that you keep your reminders on, and you start to think about the way you actually go mm-hmm. through your day, for most of us, it's more like a crime scene than a beautiful scene,
yes.
right?
Have you been peeking at my desk, Amber?
It's been that way for me too, right? Because I had a services company. I did consulting before I started actually building product. And so when I say I come from empathy, it's because I have been that person for years. That person kind of struggling with, you know, one day to the next in the handwritten to-do list. And I have six different to-do lists and they're not tracked anywhere. And it just... And then you get what we call to-do list leakage, where, you know, you forget to copy one down onto the next list, or it just sort of falls off somewhere along the way. And so I was really looking at this, the whole way we were looking at time was just kind of messed up, honestly. And we weren't really looking holistically at it, looking at our meetings, everything we had to get done, and trying to proactively manage it. And so that's where Bella came from. This idea of helping you understand more about where your time's going so you can start to take better control of it. You run better meetings. You take better meeting notes. You can actually find them because we save them on the calendar. Your to-dos get planned on the calendar. And then one of the best things, especially for anybody that loves to, I don't know if you're like me, you like to write it on the to-do list and then you like to cross it off. Like it's just some satisfaction in that, right? Get that thing. And I don't know about you, but I am one of those people that if I did something that wasn't on the list, I would write it down just to cross it off. Like,
totally. That is me. Yes, I will do that. Oh my gosh, yes.
Absolutely. And so I said, well, how do we create a more visual representation of time? And so it was about having a to-do list side by side with the calendar. And so you can actually drag things on the calendar. And when you mark them off, there's little lines go through them. So you get that same satisfaction of knowing, hey, I'm progressing, I'm getting things done. The power that you're of really moving into a more digital platform is the ability to see what happens over time.
Yes.
That's what you lose on those manual handwritten lists. And I have a theory. I can't prove this yet, but I have a theory part of why we lose some of our motivation, why we get so tired. You know, you get to the end of the week and you're just like, oh, did I do anything this week?
Yes.
Because we're throwing away the records of it with these old manual handwritten to-do lists. We're just throwing it away. And so we don't have the ability to reflect and look back and go, shh, I got these 48 things done this week. Man, I rock. I totally rock.
Yeah.
Right? Versus the, oh, I'm so tired going to the weekend. You're like, I rock. I'm going to the spa this weekend. You know, you need it.
Exactly.
And so as I wanted to think about it, I want to help people really reimagine how they look at time. And over time, we're adding some of these, we're going to be adding some fun engagement and other features to it to kind of help gamify it a little bit. But it's really more about, I want to meet people where they're at, help them move forward, because everybody's walking their own path, right? And we all come from a different place of what does good time management look like. And so even with Bella, we've built the pieces, and then you decide, you know, hey, do I want to schedule those first things on the to-do list in the day, or do I want to put them later on my calendar? Like, how should time look for me so that you can thoughtfully plan what you want your life to look like and your time to look like.
I love that, because if you think about it, like, we are always basing crap off of what somebody else is doing. We always looking at, oh, well, this person has all this time to do this and that, but we really don't know that. We don't know what process they may have. And to me, time is one of the most precious commodities that we have, because guess what? You can never get it back. Like, you can get more time, but you can't get back the time that you lost. So, I mean, it's the most precious thing.
Exactly.
But I think the point, like you said, of not tracking, not being able to say what you've done in a day, in a week, in a month, is what sometimes leaves us unfulfilled. Like, oh man, I ain't do nothing. You know, when you may have, but you're not tracking it.
Exactly. And you know what? As women, we are so hard on ourselves. Exactly. Man, for most of us, there is no critic worse than the one in our head. And we are 10 times harder on ourselves than anyone else in our life around us. And so how do we quiet that noise in our head? And I was like, you know, I look at being intentional about the time as that, hey, shut up voice. Actually, I got to let that, like, be quiet. Yeah. Stop being so hard on myself. Give myself a little grace here. I'm getting more done than I think. Or even where it's like, oh, well, I said I was going to do this at the beginning of the week. And then we kind of start tracking. We're like, oh, this other thing came up, or this other opportunity came up. And we can really be more intentional about the trade-offs.
Yes.
So we also don't want to just simply say, add more to our plates, right? Because a lot of us have a tendency to do that. Oh, I got this opportunity. So, you know, now I'm just going to work an extra 5 hours. We are not so nice to ourselves all the time, right?
We do that though. We absolutely do that. Mm-hmm. I am very grateful now. I have a friend working with me who's a publicist, and she's helping me kind of reshape things because I'm very, very stingy with my time. Like
that's good. That's
yeah. It's mm-hmm. it's almost like I have to see the value in it to take it. Like it just has to make sense to me. And I was telling someone the other day, I said, I don't do it to be mean. I'm 43. I'm trying to be more intentional and more on track than ever before because time does not stand still for anyone. And I need to get done. There's an impact that I want to make before I leave here. And I don't know how long I'll be alive. And I don't concern myself with that, but I do concern myself with what I spend my time doing and what I spend my time on. So if someone wants to approach me about a business opportunity, you need to have your ducks in a row before you approach me because you probably don't have much time to waste with me if you're not intentional about mm-hmm. what it is that you're doing. So I think that word intentional alone just sets the whole thing in place.
Absolutely. Because you're right. We don't know how much time we have. And a lot of us have a dent in the universe right. we want to make, you know, and it's our unique dent. It's what's right for our path. It's what's right for us. And by really rethinking time, and that's why I appreciate you talking about that. So often people are like, oh, time management, like not fun, right? To talk about it. But I'm like, no, it's so empowering. Because what are those wonderful things that you want to focus on, but you can't find time for? Hey, let us help you find that time by getting more intentional, by really being thoughtful about where the time goes, shutting off the distractions, etc., so that you can go walk your path and make your dent.
That makes so much sense. I love that. I love that. I mean, mm-hmm. I think, you know, we all want to make an impact. And I don't think people intentionally set out to not do it, but there's that word you said, time management, that some of us mm-hmm. let overtake us. It's like, so who's in control? You or time? What's controlling what, whom at this point? So if mm-hmm. you don't manage your time in a way where you can be more intentional and be more consistent, then what are you doing?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you know, who teaches us time management? So let's step back and think about that. Who teaches
really
us this?
Nobody.
Truly. Precisely. This is the problem.
Yes.
Nobody's teaching us this. No one's teaching us, you know, how do we manage our time better? And those that want to self-improve, you know, we go look, we read books and we find methodologies because we're all a little different. We're all wired differently. So different ways work better for different types of people. And that's what's beautiful about the human condition, frankly, because we all do think so differently. But what I tend to find is it's the same with like meetings, running a good meeting or taking meeting notes or, you know, managing your time and your to-do lists. These are just skills that somehow we're just supposed to know. Everyone assumes it's somebody else's responsibility to teach us. And we're all looking at each other like, I'm just making it up as I go. I hope it works.
Exactly. That makes so much sense. And by you saying that, like, well, who teaches us that really kind of correlates with, I think what really stuck out for me when I was reading your bio was, you know, you use human-centered design. Now, nowadays, we don't even consider humans when we're building stuff. Like, we consider an avatar.
Right.
We consider...
A persona. Yes. I hate that word. Oh, yes. Don't get me started on what I really think of personas.
Yes, that
makes
the
people's
word.
Eyebrows go up. Like,
yes, that's the word. So I love the fact that you're bringing people back, humans back into the design of something that humans are actually going to be using. So for the listeners,
exactly,
just kind of tell us, what does that mean, like, to normal people? Because you and I, we're not normal. We're entrepreneurs, so we're not normal.
Exactly. So human-centered design, you know, after spending so many years in consulting and I was always implementing other people's software and figuring out how to make it work and figuring out, you know, how to get the processes to work. And what I knew from all of that work is, unless you really have deep buy-in from the people that are actually going to use the software, unless they're really participating in the processes, it just becomes one more thing for them to deal with, not something that is transformative to their business or to their processes or that are part of those anchors and foundations. And so I knew that hardcore from consulting work. And so I said, you know, I don't want to be the, you know, there's kind of a stereotype about tech, right? And I don't exactly fit the normal tech mold. And people are like, yeah, you don't. Most people go, really? You're in IT? I'm like, yeah, I have been for about 20 years. I'm like, huh. Wouldn't have guessed. I'm like, yep, I get that a lot. Like, it's totally, it's all good. Yeah, I'm the redhead wearing the dress, walking into the, you know, the tech party and whatever. And it's pretty typical. But part of it was, and it's the thought processes and how deeply I engage with people. And that's really why people were like, wow, this isn't a typical skill set. Well, I bring this strong collaborative nature to the work. And so I said, all right, look, I'm not going to start building my own software and pouring my soul into something unless I have people along with me, because I need to be sure that it's actually going to make a difference for them.
Yes.
And it's going to meet them where they're at and the way they think. That part was super interesting. And so it took us 2 years to get the first product and the first features out. And in that 2-year journey, at different stages of the product, and we're actually on like the fourth iteration of the product before it hit the market, because we were working. So what the human-centered design process really meant at the beginning, it was interviews.
Okay.
We had a structured series of questions we asked people. We didn't tell them how to think. We asked them open-ended questions. What made things successful? How did various or what types of things happen that didn't make things successful? We were really trying to deeply understand what was going on around the whole meeting management and time management space for people. And so, and it wasn't saying, hey, I have this idea on how to solve it. It was like, no. Tell me your pain. That was the, it's like a little therapy, right? You're like, okay, put it all on the table. Tell me what it's really like. And so people would tell us about being double and triple booked in meetings and playing. One of my favorite was one person said, yeah, I play meeting roulette. I'm triple booked in meetings. I'm never sure which one I'm supposed to be in because there's never an agenda. So I just dial into one and see if my name comes up in that. If it's not coming up there, I hang up, I dial into the second one. Like, this is the craziness some people have going on, right? And so we would hear all of these stories about what just felt like a fight day in and day out, just around your time management for people. So once we understood that, then we stepped back and said, okay, well, what would it look like if we tried to solve that problem? So we spent a couple of months doing what we call wireframing, which is just a fancy pants term for drawing screens, drawing what would we, people will think, oh, we wireframed. We did a rapid prototype. Yeah, we drew screens. we did a mock-up so you could see what it looked like. That's really what it was. So we did these mock-ups. And then what I did is one of the best things any entrepreneur can do. So you got any entrepreneurs listening, one of the best things you can ever do is to, when you're thinking about a new service, you're thinking about a product, something you want to sell, walk someone through it and ask them a series of questions about it and measure the responses, not just one person. So we spent these 2 months, I walked 30 people through these designs. And if you ever want to kill your bias about loving your baby, then you've built that thing. You've come up with your grand idea. Yeah, have 30 people give you feedback. By the fifth one, you're numb. You're like, all right, tell me.
Right?
What. You're like, yeah, you're up. Not wet. You're not.
Yeah, just beat me up.
You're like, you aren't married to anything in that thing anymore. And it's one of the best ways to get objectivity. So it really helped me understand how so many people thought differently. And some things would work well for some people, some wouldn't for others. And they would tell you why.
Right.
So that whole process of reviewing with 30 people, we discover features that aren't designed right. We discover, color combinations or functionality that might be a problem. You learn all these things about that thing you're doing that could be a problem, that could kill it when right. it goes out to the market. So then we went back and we reiterated and we came up with a fresh set of designs because now we had a whole, we knew what was solid, right? We had all those pieces that were solid, and that's what you find out in that iteration. And then we did it again, and then we had people actually test the prototypes. Oh, this was fun. So what we would do is we would put some of these little prototype screens in front of people and ask them to do something with it to test their ability to click through it. And then we collected these heat maps so we could see what they did. And we were like, oh, okay, something in that design didn't resonate because nobody could find that.
Yeah.
We asked them to do X, Y, Z. And again, it was in this whole other iteration. And so the best part about that human-centered design process, and I would tell anyone building product or service, is that idea of gathering that kind of that initial feedback as to what the pain points are, and then iterating with a group of people because they're helping you refine it and helping you figure out, oh, I can figure this thing out, or I couldn't figure this thing out. And so we had this deep whole set of information. And so we did that for a period of time while we were building the product. And the really amazing part about this whole thing, so over that 2-year lifespan, we had different sets of people because I was getting fresh eyes and different things along the way. Sometimes it was just people just testing things, see if they could do it. And so I had over 150 people involved in just getting to my base product. But here is the kicker. Over half were women.
Oh, wow.
Yes. Yes. Being a female in tech for 20 years, I had something to prove. To say, you know what? Women are extremely interested in providing the information to build better solutions. And what I noticed when I talked with a lot of women is they aren't even asked. They aren't really asked for their opinion about it. You know. And so for me, that was something that I also, part of making my dent in the universe, is not only is Wonderly bringing magic back to software, but it is being way more representative of the people that use the software.
Wow. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. So the same way that I wanted to be intentional about the product and what features it had, I wanted to be intentional about making sure I brought as many different perspectives right. to the table because we all have different perspectives. And it doesn't mean you can solve every problem for every person. You simply don't need to. But you will find huge patterns and commonalities across people. And you will find small differences that mean the world to people in terms of how it works. And so one example, we'd had feedback from a number of people that said, you know, one of my biggest issues with my to-do list, and especially because it turns out the majority of people I talk to are still keeping it written one. I mean, I've tried and abandoned more apps than I can tell you. Right? I resemble that remark, right? So I totally get this. And what they'd say is, you know, one of the biggest issues I have is I'll make this whole to-do list of these like 25 things, but it doesn't really represent how long they take. One might be 2 minutes, one might be 2 hours. And I noticed what I used to do to myself is, of course, I would put like six of those 2 hour ones, on my list, and then my other 15 items. And of course, that was the weekend list. And then I'd be really mad at myself when I couldn't get it all done.
Exactly.
It was never possible. So what we did with Bella is when you put a to-do in your calendar, there's just a little default height, but you could set a 2 hour to-do and it visually is taller in the to-do list. So you start to look at that list. You say, okay, these are my priorities. Oh, well, clearly, the more time it takes, the bigger it
Exactly.
gets on your list. And so all of a sudden you're like, wow, it's not reasonable to get six of those
Right.
2 hour ones done. Maybe I can get two of those done and the other four are going to have to move. And I just, and then helping you be at peace
Right.
with that, right? Because now you realize that where that handwritten one just wasn't getting you there. I mean, because it didn't realize that unless you were trying to draw something like that on
Exactly.
your list.
Exactly. Oh my gosh. Like, I love this. Like, it to me, I love the whole idea of how you used humans to develop your product. And I say that because think about how people launch products. Like, they just launch them and then they have support and they have a help desk or they have FAQs. But you've launched it to work for humans, but you didn't consult humans in it as you developed it. And I'm not saying everybody has to go through that process depending on what they're developing. But if you're making something this intimate, this to me that is almost like life-changing, why would you not consult humans in the design?
Exactly. Yes, and that in fact should be the default question is why are you not regularly consulting humans even after
Right.
it's built? Because so often it's like, well, I build it, I launch it. Here, somebody use it. Here, somebody try it. Give me all this feedback. I'm like, why now? Do you know how expensive that is to then go back and recode and refigure it all out and frustrating for people as well. And so in walking that different path, so I walked a slower road. Right, to get there, it took me a little longer to get my product there. And that's okay. I was okay with
Exactly.
that because it was building a dialogue with people. And so as people come into the Bella community, it's different because, every month I send out the release notes and they have a direct line of communication as well to say, hey, can you add this? Or would you think about this? So I can ask questions. So we create this regular dialogue because then people can say, hey, there's features I need. And for me as the entrepreneur, when you're staring at a list of all these things you can do, the most powerful feedback you have is from the people that are actually using
That's
your
true.
product. The same way in services, the most powerful feedback is those people that are using your
That's
services
so true.
or buying your
Yes.
products.
Yes, that is so true.
Because you want to keep them there, right? It is far less costly to keep the people that you get there in the first place. Keep them there and keep them happy than it is to go drum up new
Exactly.
business. It is far more expensive to go find the new
Yes.
business. And so for me, it's about how do I create a dialogue and a relationship with my customers so that they know there's feedback mechanisms. Everybody knows you can't do
Right.
everything at once. Everybody gets that, right? And that's the beauty of it is when we're honest about the fact that, hey, we want the feedback. And then when people actually see us make changes that they wanted, like they're just like, oh
Yes.
my gosh, that's
Right.
possible?
Because you listen, that makes a difference. That makes
Right.
a difference.
Exactly. And we had so much fun with this during the build. We had this one feature in our product that is currently it's named Instant Meeting. And what it is it's a digital notebook. It's collaborative, so you can have another person in there. And you take your to-dos, you take all your notes. And you can create to-dos and they automatically go on your to-do list, right? And we need this thing because it intended for impromptu situations. Hey, we get on a call, we're having this great dialogue, and we want to keep a record of our notes. I want to collaborate with someone. And when we do that, we just needed a place to store it, right? So we store them on our calendar. We didn't know what to call this thing. And I had named it Impromptu Meeting, which was the suckiest name, let's be honest. I'm like, oh my God, that's so awkward. Because I'm an engineer. Don't ask me to name things. I'm an engineer. It'll be beyond pragmatic and boring. And so we asked people to name it that were participating in that design with us. Boy, we got some funny names. Somebody's like, yeah, call it a drive-by. I'm like, that is not a good,
no.
Like, it's a drive-by meeting. I'm like, yeah, what a horrible name. But no, I don't think we're going to call it a drive-by.
Right.
Yeah. Or a walk around, I'm like, there's all sorts of weird stuff going on with that. I'm like, yeah, no. But then there were all sorts of creative names that people had. But ultimately, you can just imagine, right? Just think of what would you call those situations where somebody comes by and you have that meeting, right? You could, listeners at home can have fun thinking.
Yes.
We ultimately ended up calling it Instant Meeting. And I was like, oh, yeah, it's just boom, now. It's happening right now. I need it instantly. Sort of like, you know, my delivery or whatever.
Right.
And so that's what we called it. And so for the several people actually suggested that. There's several people that know that they're like, oh my gosh, I actually named a feature in that product. Because it was something that resonated.
Right.
And it resonated with other people.
Right.
And that to me is how you build in community. Right. I mean, and that's a different way of looking at software. And so it's having so much respect for those people that are using your product as well. And they also have respect for what it actually takes to build.
Exactly.
And to do these things and to meet their needs. And so it's looking at it very differently than I think historically this idea of shove software, force people to conform to it, or try to get them to use it and make a whole bunch of changes randomly. And it's just stuff that people don't understand and is really disrupting to them.
Right.
And so I wanted to walk a little slower, be a little more thoughtful, intentional, and involve people in that process.
And I think you hit all of those points, because I can't think of any other software or anything other than if they did a focus group after they've already launched whatever it is that they're doing, that really took the time to consider the people who would actually be using their product. And I think it puts the key word you said for me was respect. It puts the respect factor into the consumer, because I can remember being small, and I've already told my age, but I can remember being small and how differently merchants treated consumers. And that's not to say yep. consumers behave and do all the things they're not supposed to do. Hell, I work retail, so you know I see the good, the bad, and the ugly about it.
Exactly.
If I want to keep it real. But I think there mm-hmm. was this level of respect that just came with being a merchant or being a retailer. And then in turn, you got that respect back. Now, I think we just cater as a retailer. We cater too much, but then your product or your service loses value because you do that thing. Whereas if I'm involving you in the process from the beginning and we're working this thing out together, and then along the way, you know, I'm giving you these releases, I'm giving you these updates, we're conversing about what's working, what's not working, what do you want to see, you know, future wise, then that, to me, it's a whole different level of respect, because they know, okay, she cares not only about the product she's putting out. It's not just a moneymaker. It's just not something to put out, but she cares because she's brought us into the loop. We're walking this mm-hmm. thing out with her.
Right.
So now I respect you a little bit more, because to be honest, if you're not an entrepreneur, you don't know anything about what the struggles are for an entrepreneur to mm-hmm. number one, come up with an idea, mm-hmm. develop it, launch it, and then to maintain it. You don't understand that process.
Yes. And grow it.
Exactly.
It's a hard path. It's a lonely path, right? I mean, we're staring at a sea of choices that we have to make. And for me as an entrepreneur, I was like, well, one of the ways to make building software less lonely is by bringing people with me
right
on that whole walk and in building it, you know, in community. Because I consider it really arrogant for me to decide how you should think. Right. I just think that's arrogant. I believed as a software engineer that I don't have all the answers. And I really felt like it's really arrogant for me to tell you how to think and honestly disrespectful. Because we're not wired the same way. But if I ask you questions along the way, it turns out sometimes the changes really aren't that big. And turns out sometimes they work really well for me too. I just never thought of it.
Exactly.
And so when you ask and when you bring those ideas from the community, you build a stronger product and you feel better about the path you're walking in order to do that. Because let's face it, all of us as entrepreneurs, it's long shots for all of us. Most businesses.
Yes.
We're all a bunch of long shots. Yes.
And especially to me, when you are a creator or you are an innovator. And that's not to, you know, to throw shade on any other type of entrepreneur. I have a service-based business. I'm an event planner. I don't create anything other than I help create these experiences for customers or clients at their events. But again, like you said, how arrogant of anyone to say, oh, well, let me develop this product and this is how it should function, which I think makes your product to me a lot more inclusive for people. Because if I go and buy a Franklin Covey planner, it's just what it is. I can't change it. Now, I may can customize it to these pretty colors, but what if I need a section for coupons? Or what if I need a section for shopping? I can't do that because they didn't tell me how I should function with this planner.
Exactly. And so we want to understand more about how people think, and that's in our DNA as a company. And so, you know, sometimes people say, well, why do you have a company named Wonderly and then this product you call Bellacena? And that's because I said, you know, 2 years ago when I made this decision to make this change, it was a life change.
Yeah.
I decided the rest of my career will be spent building software, doing this with the multitude of problems.
Right.
Because the way I was thinking and approaching it was really different. And not everybody likes hearing that we need to have more people involved.
Right.
That requires a lot of change.
You know, they don't.
It requires different processes.
Yes.
No. Mm-mm. No. So we were talking earlier on this, right?
Yes.
And basically creating, they're a caricature of a customer. And usually they're blended across a bunch of people. So they don't really represent any one person.
Mm-hmm.
But the problem with personas, dirty little secret about the IT industry, they're a proxy. They're a proxy for talking to real customers. That's what they are.
Wow.
We don't like to talk about this. And that's what some people like. I make people squirm a little when I talk about this. I said, yeah. So you say, oh, well, I just made sure that it's what the persona would do. Yeah, it's what I say that persona would do.
Right.
We got to be real careful with this whole, you know, if we use it simply as a proxy or a blended average of people in that group, well, averages don't really help. They don't help us catch the nuance and what's special and different about people. And so I don't, and people are like, oh, well, don't you use personas? No, I don't. And there's some people that are like, well, you're just doing it wrong. I'm like, that's nice. I'm going to keep talking to customers and I'm direct about it. I'm like, I'm going to keep talking to customers and slow and steady as my business grows, we're going to keep iterating and it's going to be the product that people need because we do need to do this differently.
That makes so much sense. Like it's totally changed my entire mindset of, you know, this whole avatar thing, because we teach people that. I've taught event planners that. I've taught event planners that you need to figure out your niche and you need to figure out your target market. But why do we have to figure it out when, hell, we can go ask the person, what is it that you need? Like, we don't want to talk to people, but we want to sell products and services to them.
Right? How is that for ironic? Oh, I don't want to talk to you to find out what you need, but I'm going to come back around and try and sell it to you. Well, how about I ask you what you need so that later when I come back around and sell to you, you're like, yeah, I know it's going to be what I need.
Exactly. And I think too, like, oh my gosh, like, Amber, the whole human-centered thing should be just a concept on its own, because I think most businesses hit or miss or take a long time to kind of develop to the level they need to go to because they keep up with these personas and these avatars and who their target is. I had a guest on, actually, he was on last week, Ramesh, and Ramesh said, your target audience or your niche customer is the customer that wants to buy from you.
Exactly. It's really simple. It's more simple than we make it. And sometimes it's, you know, it's less scary to come up with a persona than it is to sit down in a real conversation and be vulnerable with people, right? Because that means I come from a place of, I mean, I know what works for me, but I don't know if that works for everyone else. And so you come from a much more empathetic place. And for even some of your listeners, IDEO, I-D-E-O is the organization that really made human-centered design famous. And they have some really good case studies out there about human-centered design. And so even if you Google it, you're starting to see more and more examples of companies. Mm-hmm. We're early on companies really going into human-centered design. Now, I discovered recently that the architecture industry does a lot of stuff with human-centered design, which I did not know because I'm not in the architecture industry. Yep, I happened to be, okay, I crashed a happy hour with another friend and it was an architecture thing, but it was really open for lots of people. And I was talking to all these architects and it was all women. And I was talking about, I was using human-centered design to build software. And they're like, yeah, we do that all the time. And I was like, oh, my people. They know exactly what it is and they know where to, you know, there's certainly challenges to the process and how do you deal with all the information and all that kind of stuff. But it's a more compassionate way to actually build products and services. And, you know, one of the tricks, you know, why human-centered design, back to your previous guest's comment about it's the niche, that person that wants to buy from you. When you involve people in human-centered design, they tell you very explicitly where the problems are. All the information that you gather along the way, that's what you use later for your marketing material and your sales material.
Exactly.
And so you don't get to that point where you're like, well, I have no concept of where to begin. No, you kind of go back to those first things and at least gives you things to go back on and iterate on as you go to market some of those services past that initial set of customers.
And I think that they're more apt to listen and pay attention to you when you go that route, when you think about, you are empathetic to their plight. You're trying to solve a solution, because that's basically what entrepreneurship is about. It's about solving someone's problem. But you also have to think about, how am I going to solve that problem if I'm not involving them in the process of what it is they need? Because again, this whole entire thing is like a journey for us all. Like, it's almost like there's no playbook. Like, I get so mad when I see, oh, guides to entrepreneurship. Oh, please don't sell me that. That's like, this is a golden ticket to heaven. You know, like, I'm buying a golden ticket to heaven. No, I don't think that that's the path. I think we all have to carve out our own journey and our own way. But again, like you say, you have to get back to the human interaction. So let me ask you this. I'm finna play devil's advocate. I'm finna be petty for a second. As someone that's in tech, do you think that because everything's so freaking convenient now, I can pull up an app. I can text you instead of calling you, or even an email. Is that why we've lost this touch for human-centered design? Is that what it is? Like, where do we lose this?
Part of it is we have moved to such a, use 42 different tools to enable all your communication at whatever random time. And so we've embraced this go, 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 go all the time lifestyle, and here layer on all these tools. And so our communications have also become more abrupt, right? Mm-hmm. And when you shift away from spoken communication to written communication, a lot of the nonverbals get lost as well, right?
Right.
And so when we solely rely on technology, we lose some of that communication. Now, the other part of it that's a little different too, why we've lost some of that human-centered things, is our design capabilities have to keep up with the technology changes. So that's right. Another whole aspect to this, because you have to have designers that are capable of designing different experiences. That is not trivial in the technology world. Right. So it's like, that level of creativity that you might see in planning an event where the world is your oyster and you can pull those things together. What we've done instead is we've tried to automate the communications. So it's bots. Mm,
yeah.
I hate bots.
Yes.
Yes. To be blunt. I want to think more about better ways of doing things. So like I've enabled people can kind of message me, right? The little messaging things, but it's not a bot. It comes to me.
Right.
When people send it, because I just wasn't ready to automate that communication. And so many of the bots I interact with, I end up angry. Because it didn't answer my question, and I ended up calling support anyway.
It's a total waste of time. Yeah.
Right. And so again, I want to be really thoughtful about that. And so often we try to automate away all the interactions, and I want to think about things a little differently. And so like over time, I want to do more with training and more with video and more with, like webinars or different ways for people to learn things, as opposed to trying to automate things away. You have to have a whole mix, right? A whole different mix of things, because different people work differently.
That's true.
But right now it's felt so much like it's in that desire to let people self-serve and answer it. We gave them bots, but my personal experience hasn't been that they've been great. And a lot of people I've talked to have said the same thing, that they aren't necessarily a great experience, because you've just said, as opposed to reaching out to a human, you'd rather I talk to a robot.
Exactly.
It doesn't answer. So I'm that much crankier with you by the time you call me.
Right, right. That's so true. That's so true. Mm-hmm. And everything now is about automation, because people don't have time. But I think it goes back to your earlier point of, if we manage time, or if we're taught how to manage time, automation, I'm not going to say it never would have a place, because I think in some instances, things we have to, maybe.
It does. It absolutely has a place. I'm not saying we don't have a place for automation at all,
right.
But I'm saying that automation is often the default answer for us. And I wish we would look more at design of the solutions. And that's what I'm trying to do. And I mean, I'm very early stage. And so we're literally just now thinking about how can we do more interesting things with user engagement to make it more visual and to make it easier and to engage. And so we certainly aren't perfect. We're working on designs to improve it in our own product continually. But I think that whole improving engagement so that our products are easier to use, it's tough. It's really tough in tech.
It is.
Because people's brains are, yes, and because our brains are wired differently. And so it's definitely a non-trivial exercise in order to try and take those really creative designs and engage people in new ways. People look at Apple as the great example. Right from way back when the iPhone and some of that stuff first came out of design.
Right.
But not everyone, that level of design doesn't exist in every product, right? it requires skills and abilities to build that in. And so I think even as an industry, we've had this rapid technical innovation that's happened as well. And we need a design innovation to happen as well, to come along with that, and more appreciation for design as part of the build processes. And so it's a journey, I think, for all of us. And as an industry, I think it's a huge journey for us as well.
That's true. I love that. I love that. So as an entrepreneur, you know, share with the listeners, like, what isn't so hard about being an entrepreneur that may have surprised you? Because we always talk about, oh, this is so hard. And we kind of turn people off with entrepreneurship, like, oh, girl, I ain't doing that. You, you know, we turn people off. So share with us, like, what hasn't been hard for you that surprised you?
For me, because I'd spent so many years in tech, actually iterating through and building things, that's actually, that wasn't that hard. I mean, yeah, it's a lot to manage. I've discovered the more, especially now that I'm getting out in the market, the thing that's not hard is really talking about the desire to make this change and to do this different thing and to bring your passion into that conversation. I can, people will say to me, you are awful passionate about software. There's a look I usually get with that. I get a really special look. It's like, well, I am, because I literally believe it can change people's lives. You know, that doing this, it really, really can. You know, it's like, what is an extra 2 hours a day worth to you? And then you step back and think about, like, And so for me, the more I've been able to really embrace pursuing this mission, that makes it a lot easier to deal with the inevitable setbacks. And that for me has been the big thing, is really about that passion, but why I'm solving it. You can get yourself to make that first move as an entrepreneur, everything else gets a lot easier. And so for me, I've kind of learned that in order to help myself along, sometimes I have to be slightly impulsive. Which is good. It's good, because I'm kind of rebellious. Like, my little, you know, my little inner farm kid comes out and she gets a little rebellious sometimes. But that's a good thing. And so sometimes that means I send an email, make a request for help, or do something I'm thoroughly uncomfortable with, embracing that little inner rebellious part of me. And the more I've embraced her, the bolder she gets.
Yes. I think, like, for me, like, my strut just a little different, sis. When, as I walk out of that retail job, my strut gets a little different, because I'm like, okay, I'm walking into my entrepreneur job now. I done left this one behind. But I think it does build a lot of confidence. But we always talk about, like, what's so hard about being an entrepreneur when, again, here go those key words again. Time management, being intentional, being empathetic to your person or persons that you are trying to sell to, and having respect. It's just, it all boils down to those things to me that make it kind of easy. And I think I did it. I know I did it wrong in the beginning.
Like, we all do. We're all doing parts of it wrong all the time, let's be honest. We are. And I think part of it too, you know, we are also our own worst critics, right? And that's a part of that. We make the journey harder for ourselves sometimes because we are so hard on ourselves. And in, as opposed to beating yourself up because you don't know how to market something, or you aren't sure the right language to use for selling something. Well, you know, really what you need to do is you need to go find that salesperson you really respect and say, hey, can I do a little practice on you? Could you help me?
Right.
Could you help me? Is the biggest thing I would teach other entrepreneurs is ask questions.
Yes, and ma'am.
We we struggle with that because we think we need to be perfect, yes, right? And we think we need to know it all. And instead, I've had actually a lot of men along the way. They're like, no, we really want to see this succeed. And we really want to see you succeed. Ask questions. Ask where you need help. Ask for help with our works. Right. Ask.
Right.
But I was the one that had to figure out what to ask. Once I started asking, I was like, oh, well, this is easier. Oh, and guess what? It turns out, here's the other little thing about entrepreneurship that most people, they're like, oh, it's too hard. What you need to know about it is the other entrepreneurs around you that you meet would love to help, especially when they are further down the road. Yeah. I've been startled by that sometimes. Like some of the people that make time to answer my questions, I get really surprised. I'm like, why would you, that's gotten to this level of success, help little itty bitty old me that's just, you know, at the beginning of their journey? They're like, yeah, because I know what that was like.
Right. That's so true.
Let me know how else I can help. And that's, I don't think I appreciated that until just really recently, when I've had a number of more established entrepreneurs that have been helping me with specific components in things that I needed to work on for my business. And when I realized people care more than it feels like sometimes. You just can't always see it because you might be wrapped around what you're doing internally.
That's so true. Oh, I love that. Like, I think that's so, so awesome. So like, as entrepreneurs, we have to, again, be very intentional with time and things like that. So tell us, like, how do you start your day so that you can be productive? Because I think a part of productivity is being intentional. But again, these are things that we are not taught.
Mm-hmm. Yep. What I like to tell people is you have to actually start to look at your day, you know, just come in and start work and check your email and all that. First thing you should be doing is looking at your calendar and looking at and dumping out anything new on your to-do list that's in your head that shouldn't right. be. That should be the first thing you start with. And then what you should do is pick that, say, top one. Start with one if you're not used to doing this and being intentional in this way. That one thing you really want to get done today that would make today a banner right. day, and put it on the calendar. And put it on the calendar. Find the hour, 2 hours, whatever it is, schedule it on your calendar. That simple thing right there of take that one really important thing and getting it on the calendar, because when you finish that, you'll be like, yeah, I got that really important thing right. done today. And I feel good about that. And then you want to do that the next day and then the next day. And pretty soon you're starting to get more focused about your time
right.
because it's a journey. Right. So I would say start your day, put that top thing on the calendar.
That makes so sense. So how would you end your day to be more productive for the next day?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's about the brain dump again.
Okay.
Because all these things will pop up at the end of the day and you need to get them into your lists wherever you maintain them, whether it's in Bella, it's manual, some other application, right. whatever. At the end of the day, I heard a famous person once called it clear the calculator.
Oh, wow.
Right? You just got to get it out of your head and get it down, because the last thing you want to do is shift into your evening, you're home with your family, or you're going out to your events, or you're doing all these other things, but you never really wrapped up that other business. Mm. And so the last thing you want to do at the end of the day is just dump it out. Because so you don't wake up at 1 o'clock in the morning like, I got to remember to do this tomorrow. Like, because it's on your list. It's all good. You don't have to worry about it.
Like, to me, I think you can't have a productive day unless you start from like the day before, I guess, if that makes sense. Like, you have mm-hmm. to set yourself yep. up the day before so that you can be successful. It's this new day. Well, like you say, all that crap on your brain, like, mm-hmm. it just makes things a lot harder.
You can't focus because your brain can only hold so many items at a time, right? And we try to cram too much in there and think, oh, well, I could just keep my manual to-do list in my head. Yeah, I'm going to really focus on this project over here. No, you're not.
Yeah, not going to happen.
I know you're good, but none of us are that good.
Right. So as a techie, and I know you talked about this whole business is, you know, lonely. It's not, you know, like a lot of people that do it, especially women. How do you stay motivated? Mm-hmm.
For me, it's about seeing the aha moments when people get into the software and they start using it and they're like, oh, I see where you're going. Like, they're like, your brain worked, which is really funny.
Right.
By the way, it's weird to see how your brain works, but interesting. When it's hugely motivating when people see how you can see the emotions on their face and how it would make a difference in their life. They don't realize the emotions they show you. Mm-hmm. They show you the, oh my God, I'm not going to lose things anymore.
Right.
The, I'm not going to get in trouble because I forget that. I mean, the range of emotions on people's face when they really understand what you're building and why you did it. And then when people say to me, oh, I completely get why you're building this. This is so needed. And when they recognize that, that's hugely motivating. Because, you know, when I first started, everyone's like, oh, it's just Google Calendar. I'm like, no, it is not. It integrates with Google Calendar, but no, it's so much more than Google Calendar because it's the way we are intentional with our time. And now people are saying, yeah, nobody does anything quite like this on the market. There's pieces of it in other products, but the way you thought about it with everything being centered around the calendar, it's really unique. And then seeing people actually understand, it's hugely motivating. It's so motivating. It's like, okay. Because sometimes you feel like you're off in the forest and you're bumping your head on trees for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're like, am I ever going to be out on the other side?
True.
and then you meet someone that's like, oh my gosh, we so need what you're doing. Oh, I feel better.
Yes. Yes. I think that's what is missed. When you don't include your people in that process, like you may get the satisfaction of, oh, I launched something, but does it make a difference? Like, does it really solve a problem? Does it really do what people need it to do? I think that may be why a lot of products fail, is because it works for them. But have they considered the people who possibly could be buying it, or even, you know, word of mouth is like, it can kill you or it can make you, one way or the other.
Yes. Yes.
One way or the other. But I don't think they're considering, like, you know, all of the factors that go into what it is. And it could be very good products. Like, these could be bad A products, but you're missing the people piece.
Right. Right. Yes. And that people piece as well is also part of the motivation factor. Right? So I talked about the aha moments, or when you, one of the hardest ones is when you see that sense of relief on someone's face, like, there's a better way to do this. Like, oh, there's a better way to do this. It's hard to explain until you're sitting there. Or I've had a number of, you know, I've had a lot of private conversations with people too over the last couple of years. And one that's always, I go home and cry every time I have this conversation. I've had this one a number of times, is when women tell me, you know, whenever I haven't been able to use something, I've been made to feel stupid. Mm-hmm. Like when I reached out for support. Mm-hmm. It's like, well, that's easy. Well, it wasn't for me. So, okay, so you just made this judgment about me, and it's so hard for me to hear it, but I hear it over and over and over again. And I don't initiate this conversation. That's the interesting part, but something about the discussions that we've had, and that one's really hard for me. And that's part of what's deeply motivating to continue is when people say, I said, well, it really means if you couldn't use my software, that means either maybe I didn't have good enough documentation with it. That's very possible because, you know, we're early stage, or maybe the documentation wasn't written in a way that resonated with you. Maybe it should have been video or something else, or maybe the way you learn is different. And so something in my design didn't resonate.
Right.
With you. That doesn't mean you're stupid. That just means it didn't resonate. Might mean I need a better design in some cases. And that's what the whole human-centered design point is, where people will say, oh, yeah, it's pretty you did it like this, but it's more efficient to do it like X. Oh, okay.
Right.
They don't tell me I'm stupid when I did put all this work into doing this thing. Well, that's stupid. It should have been like, no. So the same way, I'm not going to tell them.
Yes, exactly.
If they're struggling to use something. That kind of goes back to that respect. But it is at the same time, well, it's really hard to hear the stories from people that have felt excluded by tech or excluded by some of those processes. It's also deeply motivating as well. And it encourages me to continue. Because clearly it's the message is resonating.
Yes. Yes. And I'm glad that you resonate more with women. Like, I think women resonate more with other women. And although we're our toughest critics with ourselves, most times, you know, we do try to encourage, you know, each other on, mm-hmm. you know, different things. So I kind of want to end it there. Like, give us some advice, like give women advice, because it seems that we're like the fastest growing when it comes to starting business. Like, we will just get ish done. Like, we're going to do it. We're going to get it done. We're going to start it. Mm-hmm. So what advice, mm-hmm. you know, what pieces of advice would you give, you know, a new and aspiring, or someone who like may be at that point, like, I don't know if this is for me. Like, I don't know if this working. What advice would you give them?
Mm-hmm. So I'd say you're 100% correct. First of all, and women-led companies are the fastest growing segment of small businesses. Absolutely true. And the statistics will actually show that from various studies. So there's something like 11 million women-owned businesses, small businesses in the country, and it's growing. It's growing rapidly. I think it was American Express. If you Google American Express and women-owned businesses, you'll find some amazing statistics about women-owned companies and that the crazy trajectory that we're on as a country with those businesses. And it's not just here. It's around the world as well. What I would say to people that are like, well, I don't know if I could do this. You don't have to do it alone. Don't assume that I'm going to have to make these 500 decisions. Well, that's a sure recipe for decision fatigue, which most entrepreneurs will tell you they get on a regular basis, right? Too many decisions to make all the time. But really knowing that you don't have to do it alone and finding other resources, whether they're women's entrepreneurship organizations, whether they're online programs, whether they're, you know, the meetup groups, whatever they are, find community so that you aren't doing it alone, because the people around you can help you advance that much faster.
Exactly.
And they'll help you grow tremendously as part of it too. And so that, I think, is the biggest thing that I would tell people. So like, oh, it takes so much courage to start a business. Yes, it absolutely takes courage to start a business, and it takes a village to help us.
Exactly. Yes, yes, that is so true. Like, yeah, I think that we sometimes, like you said, we make it more complicated than it has to be. But in the mm-hmm. end, like, you know, we have resources. We have people that want to help us. Like, I have a really good friend that I can talk to. And at first, I felt like she was untouchable because I felt like she was like way up there and I was like way down here. But she is the coolest person. I can go in her inbox at any time and be like, hey, what do you think about this? or what's your take on that? Mm-hmm. And I've never went over a day without her responding. And I know she's busy. Mm-hmm. I know she's doing, mm-hmm. putting in work. I know she is. But it mm-hmm. may be a couple of hours, but no, ma'am, it has never been beyond that to where she's not more than willing to help me. Even with surface stuff, like even if she has a course out about it, she will take time to break it down for mm-hmm. me and tell me whatever. Mm-hmm. Without saying, oh, hey, Lakeisha, I do teach a course on that. It has never come out of her mouth. Never.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And that is the other little secret about entrepreneurship is sometimes one of our favorite things to do is help someone else with their problem instead of our own. Yeah. It's a nice respite, even if it's 5 minutes. Sometimes we're like, hey, and it helps us too to be able to say, oh, I have an answer for that one.
Yes.
And there's so many good reinforcing things about it. And that's why you don't want to walk alone is you never know when you're asking for help is actually a confidence booster or is really helpful for the other person that's right. giving you the answer.
Right, right. That makes so much sense. And I think that is really key. I really love all the nuggets that you dropped tonight. But I want you to tell us, this is my last question because I know time is a factor for us, especially entrepreneurs. Like I can't tell you the last time I like actually like slept 8 hours in a row. I don't know when that happened. When I decided to get on this journey, I was like, I guess I gave up sleep too. But mm-hmm. our preconceived, you know, notion about techie people are they don't have fun. So tell us what you do for fun. Like all they do is computer work. They're not fun.
Mm-hmm. So what I like to do for fun. So probably about, I don't know, 6 years ago or so, I really got into canning. You know, like that thing your grandma did.
Yeah.
Well, she did it because she had to, right? It was a Great Depression, World War II, et cetera, way back when. For me, it's about local food and kind of controlling, you know, what I'm eating and stuff. And so I got into canning years ago and I am a rabid canner. It's almost embarrassing looking in my shelves. I do this on the weekends when I have time, but I make salsa and I make jams and pickles and pasta sauce and all of this stuff. Because then in the winter, any time of year when you can't get the same really good mm-hmm. tasting produce, that I have all of that stuff. And so I love canning and it's occasionally I'm tweeting ball canning and I'm sure they're like the one person on Twitter tweeting us, right? Because right? it's not exactly a big Twitter crowd with ball canning.
Right.
And then people are like, canning? Like really? I'm like, yeah. Yeah. Like seriously, don't mess with my canning time.
Exactly. I don't play.
I don't play. We are near applesauce season and I don't play. On the weekends, I'd be making my applesauce. I will make time right. to do that.
Oh my gosh. I think that is awesome. Like that. I love that. Like I absolutely love, love, love that. Well, I appreciate your time, Amber. You have enlightened me and I hope my listeners on so much how they can really like take their businesses and just really do a lot of different stuff with them. I think that's where sometimes the struggle is because we're trying to get this easy fix and there's no such thing. Mm-hmm. It is time. Right. Take time mm-hmm. to do what you need to do to make sure that your business is successful.
Absolutely.
I think that is so key. So I certainly, certainly, certainly appreciate you and your time tonight. So tell the listeners how they can get connected with you. And I'll make sure that I put it in the show notes so that they can check out your site and all of your social media.
Absolutely. So you can find me on LinkedIn, I'm just Amber Christian, but you can also find me at wonderlysoftware.com. And you can find Bellacina if you're curious to learn more about her. Because yes, my software's a girl. And she's at meetbellacina.com.
Okay. That is so awesome. Again, thank you so much for joining me today. Thanks for all the nuggets. I absolutely love the knowledge you just dropped. I think it has totally, and I'm hoping for the listeners to transform the way that we think about how we do business and develop products, as well as, you know, how we can learn to, you know, manage our time. So I really, really appreciate it.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. And it's been a pleasure being here as well.
Yes. Thank you.